I'm Chelsea, and I love true crime.
And I'm David, and I love horror movies.
And this is Based on a True Crime. Hi, everyone, and welcome to our second Halloween minisode and our kind of part two of Creepy Doll Week. We've been getting a lot of really cool feedback on our episode on the Conjuring universe that we've been pretty excited about. And I just wanted to bring up some suggestions and stories we've gotten from listeners. Actually, so David, you know how you met the Warrens at your college?
Yes.
So Suzanne on Facebook listened to our episode and she says, quote, "After listening to your latest podcast, I thought you guys might be interested to know that I lived in Monroe, Connecticut from 1978 to 1983, middle school until I graduated high school. I never visited the occult museum, and people there thought the Warrens were kind of weird." "They did put on a presentation at our middle school one Halloween, which was fun and a bit creepy. I can't imagine parents allowing that to happen these days." And, yeah. I can't imagine it either.
Yeah, that'd be really scary.
But man, that's so cool.
Yeah.
I bet that was really awesome. And that's kind of like in their prime too. Man, I'm jealous.
Yeah, the rock stars of the paranormal world.
Yeah. And we also had a chat with Steve on Twitter, and he suggested that we listen to the Monster Talk podcast, episode 114, about demon dolls.
Ooh, scary.
So we've been putting off listening to the full one because it does cover Robert the Doll, and I feel like if they go into much more detail, I'm going to be intimidated. But we did listen to the first 5 minutes of that episode together, and the story is just incredible. Everyone should just go listen to it. I'm not going to spoil it, but David listened to it with me, and it was pretty amazing.
Yeah.
So it's a really interesting podcast. I'm definitely going to go back and pick out a couple to listen to that are relevant to the Warren cases.
Sounds fun. Yeah.
And I also wanted to direct everyone to the Something's Not Right Instagram because Olivia has an awesome like plush Robert the Doll that I guess she got in Key West that is spectacular and creepy, and everyone should take a look at that.
It's real cute and creepy.
Cute and creepy.
Yeah.
Just like you, David.
Oh, so sweet.
All right. Well, let's get into it. So as I mentioned, this is part two of Creepy Doll Week, and this week we are talking about Robert the Doll and the Child's Play movies that were kind of inspired by his story or his legend, more like. So first I'm going to talk about just that, the origins of Robert the Doll. You know, this story happened in the early, really spans the early 1900s till today, but from what I could find online, it really is more like a legend in that there are different variations of the story.
Oh, interesting.
So there's a few points where I'm going to say, you know, I've read this or this, so pick whatever is creepier. All right. Robert Eugene Gene Otto. So not Eugene Gene, but his middle name's Eugene and he went by Gene. He grew up in a mansion in the Key West in the early 1900s. The family's maid gave him a doll, which Gene loved and would take everywhere with him. He even named the doll Robert after himself. The doll was one of a kind. He was 40 inches tall, so basically the size of a child himself, and he was stuffed with wood wool, known as Excelsior, and he was dressed in a little sailor suit.
Oh, a little adorable,
right?
Sailor suit,
just
yeah.
A little sailor suit. Yep. So shortly after receiving this doll, Gene's parents and their servants began to notice that Gene was having conversations by himself in his bedroom, but they could make out two entirely different voices. Sometimes the Ottos would wake up to Gene screaming in the middle of the night. And when they entered his room, all of the furniture was overturned and Gene would blame the mess on Robert the Doll.
I think I blamed my mess on a doll too. It was a Chewbacca the doll though.
Ooh, creepy.
Yeah.
So mutilated toys also began appearing around the house and Gene would blame that on Robert the Doll. Gene's parents said that they would sometimes hear Robert giggling around the house, and passerbys would claim to see a small doll moving between the windows. So one version of the story says that the activity became too much for the family to bear, and they put Robert in the attic, and he stayed there for many years. And the story also goes that Jean's aunt, who put Robert the doll in the attic, died of a stroke that very night. But I've also seen versions that say that Jean was allowed to keep Robert the doll, and that he kept Robert the doll by his side as he grew up and became a pretty famous artist.
I don't have a secret Robert the doll, by the way.
Yeah.
That inspires me. So just getting that out there.
You do have that Freddy Krueger doll.
Yeah, that came later, though.
Yeah. Jean eventually inherited his family's mansion. For the stories where Robert the doll is locked in the attic, this is when Jean would take Robert the doll out of the attic and place him back in his old bedroom. So because Jean was such a prominent artist, his mansion became known as the Artist House. It actually still is known as the Artist House, and it's a bed and breakfast.
Oh, cool. We should go stay. Yeah.
Stay in Robert the doll's room. Don't worry, Robert the doll's not there anymore, which we'll get to. Eventually, Jean got married. His wife was named Annette, and surprisingly, she was not a fan of a creepy child-sized doll that moves around the house by itself. Yes? I've heard two different stories about this. Either Annette locks Robert the doll in the attic and dies from insanity, or, you know, Jean actually kept Robert by his side until he died in 1974, and then Annette left the house and left Robert the doll in the house. So in 1974, the house was purchased by Myrtle Reuter, and she inherited Robert the doll. While she owned the house, she would have tenants stay with her, and they reported hearing footsteps in the attic above their rooms. A plumber who was working on the premises said he heard giggling, and when he turned around, he noticed that the doll had moved across the room on its own.
Not good.
Yes. Malcolm Ross, a reporter for The Hill, visited Robert in his room in the house during this time, and he said of his experience, quote, "It was like a metal bar running down my back. At first, when we walked through the door, the look on his face was like a little boy being punished. It was as if he was asking himself, who are these people in my room, and what are they going to do with me?" He also noticed that when one of his friends commented that Jean Otto was an old fool, the expression on Robert's face changed to an expression of disdain, as though he were following the conversation. Ross said, quote, "There was some kind of intelligence there. The doll was listening to us."
Are you serious?
Yes. That's like very Chucky to me right there.
Yeah.
So I feel like when he's being a good guy, his expression is one way, and then it's like it switches.
Right. Oh.
Freaky. Yeah. Yeah. So 6 years after purchasing the Artist House, Myrtle Reuter moved to a different house on Von Pfister Street. She had grown fond of Robert somehow.
Okay.
And she ended up taking him with her when she moved. And they lived together until 1994, when she donated him to the Fort East Martello Museum and informed the museum that he moved around on his own and he was haunted. And a few months later, she passed away.
Oh, geez. Yes. Yeah. I mean, you know, by the way, this doll moves on his own and haunted.
Yeah, a haunted doll.
Yeah, no big deal.
Present for a museum. Yep.
Yeah.
So although Robert was not initially on display, when people heard that he had been given to the museum, they started to show up at the museum asking to take a look at him. So eventually he was given his own exhibit, and visitors and staff noticed that cameras and electronics tended to malfunction near his display. Apparently, Robert's new favorite pastime, which you might have heard of if you've heard anything about the Robert the doll. I feel like this is kind of the big 1-2 punch. Yes. So his favorite pastime is cursing people who take his photo without permission. The museum has amassed a collection of letters from folks who have done that. And these letters are begging Robert for forgiveness and oftentimes kind of recounting how their curse is played out. So like after I finish this story, we're going to read some of those letters.
Oh, cool. So yes. Like how many letters do they have?
They said that they've received around 1,000 letters.
Oh, sweet Jesus.
Addressed to Robert over the years.
Oh,
yes.
Man. I thought you were going to say like 100.
Nope. Ooh. A lot of curses. He's a busy boy. A busy boy doll.
A little boy sailor doll.
Yeah. I did do a little bit of looking into why Robert the doll is cursed. The most popular story goes, so Robert was a gift from the family maid, right? So she was a Bahamian maid who was dismissed by the family and the story is either she was dismissed for practicing voodoo or she was dismissed because Jean was very fond of her and the parents didn't like that. But apparently she had made the doll for Robert and cursed it to get revenge on the parents because the parents were very cruel to their servants. And the story goes that she used Robert or Jean Otto's own hair to make the doll and that the doll basically took over his life. And that's why he was so attached to it. And that's why after he got the doll and started calling the doll Robert, he ended up going by Jean. So it's interesting, right?
Yeah.
Definitely not true. they have done testing on the hair. Okay. And the hair is a synthetic fiber.
Oh, all right.
And the museum also dug into the origins of the doll. The doll was created by the Stief Company. This was a company that actually invented the teddy bear.
Really?
Yes. Huh. At least the teddy bear is so like the teddy bear that's named after Theodore Roosevelt. I'm sure stuffed bears already existed.
Yeah.
He's also not really a doll. he was made for a window display.
Oh, I thought you were going to say he was a puppet or something, but all right, that makes sense.
Yeah, he was not made to be, you know, sold as a doll, which is why he is, I think, so unique and maybe distinct looking. They said he was part of a window display of clowns and jesters.
Oh, there you go, clowns. Yeah.
Yes.
Perfect.
A double whammy. But actually, if you look really closely at his face, you can see that it was once painted to look like a jester, but it's very faded with time. So I guess the other theory about Robert's behavior is that it was actually, he was kind of created by Jean himself. So Jean would always blame Robert the doll for his bad behavior. And somehow that like infused the doll with this mischievous energy. So I was thinking maybe kind of like a tulpa, like a creation of his own thoughts.
Ooh, that's an interesting perspective on it.
But I personally think it's a demon because it's always a demon, right?
Yeah.
It's got to be.
Unless it's an actual little boy that's dressed up as the doll. Wait, how
would
that work?
Oh, here's the other interesting thing. So You know how he was a window display?
Uh-huh.
So that little sailor outfit, they think is probably actually one of Robert's outfit or one of Jean's outfits.
Oh, so it's like an actual child.
So it's an actual child's outfit on this 40-inch window display doll.
Okay, wow.
All right, so I did want to end the story with some of the real letters written by real cursed people to Robert the doll. David, why don't you read the first one?
Dear Robert, you have probably received many letters like this from people like me, people who are sure there was no such thing as a Robert the doll curse. You see, it is easy to act tough and try to impress your friends by being disrespectful. And unfortunately, that is the camp I find myself in. My name is Dan Schultz. Back in 2009, we visited the East Martello Museum. The entire purpose of the visit was to come and meet you. We walked by your old house multiple times over the years and have always wanted to visit you at the museum. Our visit was fun and informative, and seeing you was the best part. I am not sure what made me act like a jerk to you. I didn't ask for your permission to take your picture, and I openly mocked you. Like I said, I was just trying to be funny and impress the people I was visiting with. I in no way actually meant what I said, and I realize now I made a big mistake. Since that day in late 2009, we have had a run of bad luck. I've had multiple health issues, I had a near-death experience with anemia, we've had family members and pets die, and bad luck for our finances that ended with us filing for bankruptcy and still having financial difficulties. The purpose of this letter is to profoundly apologize and act for your forgiveness. I have talked about this event on a popular travel podcast that I am the co-host of. A podcast is a radio show people can hear on their computers, and will always speak with high respect of you. Again, Robert, please accept my sincere apologies, and if you see fit to forgive and end the bad luck, I would appreciate it, as would my family. Dan Schultz, West Palm Beach, Florida. And the note stuck on it says, please post where Robert the doll will see this. Wow, that is a string of bad luck.
Yeah.
Whew. That was a pretty good apology, though.
Yeah, like, I would forgive him.
Yeah,
totally.
Admitted what he did, said he was sorry.
Maybe give his podcast a listen. I don't know.
Yeah, why not?
All right, let me read one more. Robert, sorry I did not ask aloud to take your picture. Since then, my husband lost his diamond, 1 carat, out of his ring. I tore my rotator cuff and my daughter's wedding was canceled. All happened before I returned home. Please stop the curse. I am truly sorry and life is tough enough. Sincerely, Kathy.
Wow.
Whew. Yeah. Yeah. Do you want to do one more? Do you want to do two more?
Sure.
There are so many. All right.
Yeah, let's do two more.
All right.
Dear Robert. Hello, Robert. How are you? I'm not good. I have a backache. I don't know why my back is hurt. Then I remember you. 2 months ago, I took a picture of you. I'm so sorry. I didn't know that I can't take a picture of you. Should I delete the picture? I must apologize for the delay of sending you mail. I don't know how I can apologize, so I'm writing this letter. I'm so sorry. I hope your life is very good. And that's Naoya Sitiba, Japan. There is also this little piece at the end. Dear Robert, please forgive my friend for not asking your permission before taking your picture. He is Japanese and did not understand, so please accept this apology. I really enjoyed visiting you, Dale from Eon, North Carolina. That would be the worst if you like are traveling abroad and you don't know.
Like, I know, I feel like they need to make sure they have that warning sign posted in multiple languages.
Robert's like, nope, no excuse.
All right, I'm going to read one more.
Okay.
This is from Rosie.
All right.
Dear Robert, I am very sorry for not asking your permission to take your picture while visiting the museum last week. Since I have taken your picture without permission, many strange things have happened to me. While driving back from the Keys, a deer ran out in front of our car. We had to swerve to avoid hitting it and ran off the road. We almost hit a tree. 2 days later, we had a small kitchen fire. Also, we have been hearing childlike giggles from our basement. Last night, I was home all alone. I heard a voice coming from the basement. When I went to investigate, I tripped and fell down the bottom three stairs. I got up to run out, but the door was locked. My husband said that I probably turned the lock myself without even thinking about it and locked myself in the basement. But honestly, Robert, we both know the truth. Please accept my deepest apology for taking your picture without asking. Also, please accept my daughter's apology for sticking out her tongue at you and making fun of you. Sincerely, Rosie. That's terrifying.
Pretty scary. I wonder what would have happened to the kid if she hadn't apologized for her.
Oh my goodness. Ooh. Yeah, if you're ever in Key West and have the opportunity to go to that museum and see Robert the doll for yourself, don't take his picture. Would you take his picture without permission, David?
No.
Yeah, neither would I. I don't believe, you know, I'm not superstitious, but I subscribe to the just in case theory of like, yeah, just in case, I'm just going to not do that.
Yeah, I just feel like anything that would happen that would be bad, we could just be like, Robert the doll.
Yep.
Yeah, that's crazy. Right.
Well, that is the end of my Robert the doll tale.
Good scary stuff.
Yeah, speaking of good scary stuff, why don't you tell us about another pair of best friends, a boy and his doll.
Yeah, we're going to jump into a discussion of 1988's Child Play in just a second. Hold tight.
Everyone has a birthday they'll always remember.
Can we open my presents now, Mommy? A good guy! I knew it!
Hi, I'm Chucky.
He's something, isn't he?
This is Andy's.
Time for bed, Andy.
Good night, baby.
Good night, Aunt Maggie. Good night, Chucky.
Everyone knows most accidents happen at home.
How did that happen?
This is no accident.
Andy?
I'm Detective Mike Norris, homicide.
Andy!
Miss Peterson's dead, Miss Barclay. She fell from the kitchen window.
Someone's moved in with the Barclay family. And so has terror.
Mommy, I know who was on the counter.
Andy!
Who, Andy?
Chucky.
Nobody believes you about Chucky.
In my hand,
Oh, for God's sake.
Why won't you believe me?
Because I'm sane, Mrs. Barclay, sane and rational.
No one believes the truth. Or lives to tell it. There's nothing nice about murder. And there's nothing innocent about Child's Play.
And And we're back to talk about 1988's Child's Play and just a little bit about the Chucky franchise, tying into our story of Robert the Doll that Chelsea just told us about. The story of Child's Play is a single mother gives her son a much sought-after doll for his birthday, only to discover that it is possessed by the soul of a serial killer. Child's Play it came out in 1988 and is directed by Tom Holland. And for you horror fans out there may recognize his name since he wrote and directed 1985's Fright Night, which...
So good. I love that movie.
Yeah. Yes. It's probably my favorite vampire.
And the remake is pretty good too.
Yep.
It's like I was very surprised.
Yeah. I know that was polarizing, but I really enjoyed the remake as well. So Fright Night, I guess largely considered one of the great vampire stories of all time. He also directed some classic TV from the 80s and 90s, including Steven Spielberg's Amazing Stories, 3 episodes of Tales from the Crypt, the Stephen King adaptation of Thinner, a television horror anthology called Twisted Tales, and the Stephen King adaptation of The Langoliers. Child's Play was written primarily, there are two writers involved with this story, and one is Tom Holland himself, who is credited with the final screenplay, but I guess the setup and main story and the man who is keeping Chucky alive these days is writer and director Don Mancini. As I said, he has written all of the Child's Play films and then directed the most recent 3, Seed of Chucky, Curse of Chucky, and the latest Cult of Chucky, which just came out the 1st of October. Child's Play, the cast of characters. Alex Vincent plays Andy Barclay. He's the one that gets the good guy's doll that unfortunately turns out to house the soul of a serial killer.
Oh my gosh.
Catherine Hicks plays his mom, Karen. Aunt Maggie is played by Dina Menoff. Chucky himself and also Charles Lee Ray in the flesh is played by Brad Dourif. And Detective Mike Norris is played by the great Chris Sarandon.
So did he get that because of Fright Night, you think?
Yeah, because he had worked with Tom Holland. Right. Yeah, so Chris Sarandon plays, I love his character. He's he has quite a bit of screen time in this.
Yes.
It takes place in Chicago, so he's a Chicago cop, and it's just really cool seeing Chris Sarandon in this.
He's so good. I like him in everything.
Yeah,
I'm excited to meet him in a couple weeks.
Yeah, we got to meet him at Horror Hound, where?
Columbus.
Horror Hound Columbus, Ohio, but we're attending as fans instead of having a lab creature booth this year. All right, so every film session is not complete without a lengthy session of trivia.
Oh my goodness, just don't ask me anything.
All right, well, not trivia questions. So there's some pretty cool stuff about Child's Play centering on Chucky. So Chucky himself was designed by special makeup effects artist Kevin Yeager, who also refined Robert Englund's Freddy Krueger for A Nightmare on Elm Street Part 2 Freddy's Revenge, Part 3 Dream Warriors, and Part 4 The Dream Master. Yeager worked with puppeteer Brock Winkless and actor Brad Dourif to bring Chucky to life. And producer David Kirschner is also credited as contributing to Chucky's design. I guess really the 80s doll craze was a big part of the inspiration for Chucky's appearance. You know, there were a lot of toys back then that some of you may recognize, like Teddy Ruxpin, My Buddy, and spinoff Kid Sister, and of course the Cabbage Patch Kids and the Garbage Pail Kids.
Yeah, like having those two in the same sentence. Yeah, just the Cabbage Patch Kids and the Garbage Pail Kids.
Right, yeah. Well, yeah. It's because the Garbage Pail Kids were a parody of the Garbage Patch. Wait, Cabbage Pail. No, wait.
But I feel like the Garbage Pail Kids is already its own horror spin on dolls in a different way than Chucky.
Yeah, it's its own thing. Just like David S. Pumpkins, right?
Yep.
All right, a couple more fun things here. There is a really cool article that I found called Blood Buddy, The Strange Evolution of the Chucky Doll, that was written for Wicked Horror by author Nat Brenmer. And the quote that I'm going to read just kind of describes how Don Mancini's original script differs from Tom Holland's film script. So, quote, "Don Mancini's original screenplay was very different from what wound up being made. His story was called Blood Buddy and was much more focused on the consumer satire that is sort of a background element in Child's Play. A solid idea, Blood Buddy is an interesting twist on a killer toy story, as the doll is actually a manifestation of Andy's id. Satirizing dolls that pee and poop, etc., the Blood Buddy is a doll that bleeds when cut or scraped, so that kids would have to go and buy special band-aids from the toy company to patch their buddy up. In this initial story, Andy makes a blood pact with the toy, mixing his blood with its synthetic blood and causing it to inadvertently come to life. From that point on, even if Andy doesn't realize it, the two are linked. The doll kills anyone that the boy harbors an unconscious resentment toward.
I really want to see that movie. How come that doesn't exist?
Well, I guess because
that's incredible. Yeah.
Yeah. And I feel like a lot of that taps into the, a little bit of that, the Robert the Doll like stuff, I guess, a little bit.
Yeah. I know we're going to get into it more in the movie discussion, but you know, we as the audience during this movie know from the beginning that Chucky is possessed by the soul of a serial killer, and Chucky's his own thing, to quote David Pumpkins. But it's interesting because everyone else in the movie, they're questioning if it's Andy. So yeah, it would kind of be interesting to have a movie from the perspective of kind of them, of like, is it the boy or is it the doll? I like that. Ooh, let's write the script, David.
Well, I think there was already. But yeah, actually tying directly into what you were just mentioned, Roger Ebert really liked Child's Play.
Nice.
He loved it and he gave it a positive review. So I'm going to read an excerpt of his review from November 9th of 1988. And Roger Ebert says, quote, "What is it about dolls that makes them seem so sinister? Why is it that kids in the movies always seem to share some evil secret with their dolls? And why is it that when you see a doll on a shelf, its eyes seem to move by themselves? I think that when we were kids, we all secretly believed that our dolls were up to something while we were asleep. And the movies can exploit that fear because most of us are not aware that we carry that secret around as part of the subconscious trauma that makes life so interesting. The movie also has an intriguing plot device, which is that nobody, of course, will believe that the doll is alive. Little Andy tries to tell them, but they won't believe him. Then his mom realizes that Chucky is moving and talking, even though his batteries were not included. They won't believe her."
That's great, man. Yeah. So you were not afraid of dolls, though, as a child?
No, I wasn't. No.
Did you have dolls? Did you just have action figures?
I mostly had small action figures. I had a Chewbacca doll that was like, I don't know, maybe 2 feet tall.
Jeez.
And some teddy bears and stuff like that. An Ewok, plush Ewok. But I didn't have anything that was very like humanoid.
Yeah.
That were doll sized. How about you? Did you have dolls?
Well, I've told you my doll story. I think I said in the last episode I was going to tell it on this.
Oh, well,
so, I mean,
okay.
Yeah.
I
was of the age of when Goosebumps was very popular. So the ventriloquist in that, the ventriloquist in Buffy. But my fear of actual dolls, I had this really traumatic nightmare when I was a kid and I could still like envision it in my head. I heard scratching in the closet in my bedroom. And I went and I opened the closet door and there was, a bunch of like clothes piled in the closet, kind of like my closet now.
All right. Yeah.
And I moved the clothes aside and there's like a plastic baby doll. It's just like the bald ones with the baby face and like the soft body, but hard plastic arms and legs and like a hard plastic head. And suddenly like the face contorted into like a freaky vampire face with sharp teeth and it like flew at me. And then I woke up screaming and then I've hated dolls ever since.
That's terrifying.
Yes.
Yeah. 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 I probably would swear off dolls after that.
Yeah.
Too.
The end.
Ooh, that's scary.
Yep.
Yeah. Ooh, that's a good one. Okay. So speaking of like, spooky things, this one has quite a few good taglines. There's a whole list of them, I guess, that they used for the marketing of the movie. I'll just list them off here. No one believes the truth or lives to tell it.
Nah.
Yeah. Meh. All right. He wants you for a new best friend.
That one's all right.
You'll wish it was only make-believe.
No, I don't like that one.
Andy Barclay has a new playmate who's in no mood to play.
Too long.
This doll is killer.
That one's okay. I kind of like that one. It's stupid, but I like it.
Chucky is one mean SOB.
Is there supposed to be a second meaning to that? Or is it?
I don't know.
No. I don't really get that one then.
All right. I like this one. Something's moved in with the Barclay family, and so has terror.
That's all right. It's also long. Those are really the taglines.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Eh.
My personal favorite's from part two, and that's on the poster. It's "Sorry, Jack, Chucky's back," and it's Chucky about to snip off the head of a Jack in the Box.
I do like that one. It's much catchier.
Yeah, and that one reminds me kind of the poster art dictating the tagline, like with Ghoulies, that they'll get you in the end.
I know that story. Yeah. Describe the Ghoulies poster for anyone who hasn't seen it.
The Ghoulies is the little creature coming out of the toilet.
Get it? They'll get you in the end.
It's brilliant.
They're talking about your butt.
Yep, that's true. I think a lot of us were scared to use the toilet after that movie. So, all right, well, let's jump into the discussion of the movie. All right, Chelsea, what did you think of Child's Play? A lot of build up, I guess.
I liked it more than I thought I would. I avoided seeing this movie for years because of the whole evil doll thing, but it was really funny. I think what really freaks me out when I'm watching movies with like possessed dolls, it's like the like little pitter patter of feet, you knowing stuff is going on, but most of the characters not realizing it. But Chucky is revealed very early. And I feel like that kind of like to the people also, you know, Andy knows the whole time. The mom finds out pretty early. Chris Sarandon's character, you know, also finds out. And yeah, it's the comedy really helps to offset some of the tension in a good way, though. It made it watchable for me. And for anyone else out there who doesn't like evil doll movies, don't worry too much about this one. I feel like I want to kind of compare it to The Boy.
How so?
So The Boy follows along with all of these scary doll tropes that do get to me, right? The pitter patter of feet, the like shadows moving under the door. You know, you never see the doll moving, but it's in different places. Like that kind of stuff is what freaks me out in scary doll movies. But that movie did not stick the landing.
Oh, no, it did not.
No, it was actually quite bad. So like on a whole, I really did not like that movie because it was both unpleasant for me to watch as someone who is scared of dolls and is also just bad. Whereas like this movie was much better. I liked it.
Cool.
Keep staring at your Chucky. David's wearing a Chucky shirt as we're recording our Chucky episode. I'll have to post some pictures. It is gory.
Yeah, it's Travis Filigrant, T-Rav, in collaboration with Cavity Colors.
Yeah. Yeah, I've seen you wear that shirt a lot, but now that I've actually seen the movie, I understand why he's fleshy and not just a doll.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I guess that it would be really weird.
It was kind of weird, yeah. Oh, but what did you think? I mean, I know that you liked it. But tell our listeners what you think, David.
Yeah, I like Child's Play quite a bit. I like the whole franchise. I didn't see it in theaters. I was a little young for that. And I was, I don't know, I thought that the creepy doll aspect of it did freak me out a little bit as a kid. So it wasn't until I was like an older teenager when I started watching them. It was probably by the time the second or third one came out where I saw one and two together and started to kind of dig Chucky. I don't know. I wouldn't say I'm a Chucky super fan, but I do appreciate the series. And
I'm so glad you're not a Chucky super fan. The movie wasn't as scary as I thought, but if we had one of those dolls in the house, I would not sleep.
Yeah, don't worry. I won't get a Chucky doll. Maybe a good guy's doll. How's that? No. Is that all right? Yeah?
I'm Tommy. Let's be friends till the end.
Hidey-ho.
Oh, yeah. We did watch Chucky, too.
We did. We watched. Yes. We did. We watched the second one.
I like that one, too. I didn't like it as much. It felt much more tragic. I really enjoyed the first one as like a complete story. I'd be curious to watch the later ones because I feel like so many people seem to really like Bride of Chucky.
Oh, yeah,
Bride of Chucky. I do like Jennifer Tilly. So I feel good about the movies now. I feel like we're going to make our way through. We'll have to give an update maybe when we finally watch Cult of Chucky because everyone's been talking about it. I feel like I've seen everyone coming out with podcast episodes about Chucky and Cult of Chucky in like the last 2 weeks. So I guess we're not the only ones.
Yeah, it's a good time to be a Chucky fan, yeah. I suppose, with new movies coming out. I do feel like, not that it's a companion piece to Fright Night, but it feels like a Tom Holland film, the first one does. I was listening to one of the more recent Shockwaves episodes where they interview Don Mancini, and he was talking about the thematic shifts between films. So the first one is a suspense thriller, a little bit more about the Charles Lee Ray, the serial killer.
Yes, I should say I appreciate their use of three names.
Yeah,
very, very serial killery, very on point for serial killer. He also has a nickname, the Lakeshore Strangler, right? Which isn't Lakeshore a brand of like children's clothing?
Oh, I don't know, but it's like Lakeshore Drive in Chicago.
All right.
Yeah.
I guess that's where he was strangling people.
Yep, on the waterfront.
Yeah. I thought he was named after the children's clothing brand.
Oh, I didn't know about that. Maybe it was a little of both.
I don't know. I have to cut all this out if I'm wrong. I don't want to sound stupid.
You never sound stupid. Never, ever. Yeah, the three... Until I...
Oh, it's Lakeshore Learning. They do supplies for like elementary school, like teacher supplies. That's what my mom used to get their catalogs. That's why it sounded so familiar.
All right. Yeah. It's better than a company that strangles people.
Yeah. Hopefully they don't sell Chucky dolls to schools.
Yeah. I mean, that'd be pretty awful, I guess. Did I almost say pretty cool? I didn't mean that.
Or maybe it's fine. We don't have any kids.
What if we dress up the cats in like a Chucky outfit? Good guy doll outfit.
That'd be adorable. Our cat's wearing little overalls and striped shirts. Are you kidding me? That would be so cute.
Hi, I'm Eamzy. Let's be friends till the end. Meow, meow, meow. I don't know. All right, get a little spoilery and just walk through the movie real quick. I know this is a mini-sode, so.
Yeah, I feel like our movie discussion's already dwarfed the...
It meets it.
All right.
Yeah. The movie starts with what I figure to be your favorite part, which is the serial killer chase.
Yes, there is a serial killer chase. Chris Sarandon and what's his name? Brad Dourif.
Yep.
Into a toy store.
Yes.
And?
Some sort of mystical.
Well, Chris Sarandon shoots him.
Oh, right. First. Yes. Yeah.
He gets shot. He's dying right next to a big old display of... Good guy dolls.
Yes.
Which is this, you know, cute baby-faced red-headed doll wearing overalls. I want to say you get like a kind of a Bob the Builder vibe, right? Because they sell like a little toolkit for him. And he has his own TV show also that you see little clips of later. But yeah, so he's dying and he grabs out one of the dolls and does a little voodoo chanting. And
all of a sudden, the skies open up and some vicious clouds come in and some lightning strikes. I guess the whole thing just kind of blows up. The toy store just explodes.
Yep.
And it's one of those where you're like, oh, Chris Sarandon's in this. Oh, but he's dead. But no.
I thought he was dead, but apparently he somehow walks away from that ginormous explosion unscathed. And what's also unscathed is one particular good guy doll. I was going to say one particular Robert the doll. Oh my goodness. One particular good guy doll that will come back momentarily. Next, you meet Karen and Andy. She's a single mom working, was it at like a perfume counter in a department store?
Yeah, she's working at a department store. Yeah. They kind of like see the, it starts off really cute because Andy's birthday. Making this breakfast and you think like, he's just a kid sort of being a little obnoxious, gonna eat cereal in front of the TV. But then they kind of do a little bit of a twist and he's bringing his mom breakfast, even though it's his own birthday.
Yeah. Oh, he's such a good kid.
Yeah. And Alex Vincent, I feel like, is a great child actor. And he's not annoying. Sometimes kids in movies are just
especially
weird.
In that decade. I feel like there are lots of annoying children in movies of that time. But he was excellent.
Yeah. He's like making the sugary sweet cereal, then it's like the Chuckios or whatever, and then adding sugar to it.
Really... Chuckios? Is that what they're called?
Something. I don't know. No, they're not Chuckios, of course, because there's only one Chucky. They all have different names. All the good guys.
Yes, all the good guys have different names.
Yes.
Yeah.
So there's a, hi, I'm Elmer. Or I don't know. You're like, hi, I'm Kermit. Hello.
It gets copyrighted.
They're like, I mean, I sound like Kermit. No, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I did not know that going into this movie. I guess I kind of thought they were all Chucky dolls. I always think that the movie's called Chucky. It's not. It's called Child's Play.
But after three, they use Chucky in all the titles. So.
Yeah. Maybe that's so confusing. Yeah. But yeah, so it's his birthday. You know, his mom gives him a present and he unwraps it and he's disappointed.
Yeah, it's like a good guy building kit. Yeah, or like a
good
tool
guy
kit.
Toolbox and some like clothes, but he really wanted one of them giant, creepy, talking good guy dolls that each have their own unique name.
But Karen's thinking on her feet because... She is at least like, yeah, I know, you know, I couldn't like afford this super awesome toy. Yeah. But it kind of feels like when Andy's watching the commercial for the good guy doll, that this was kind of his first time seeing that there was a doll, an interactive doll. It's almost like the cartoon had been out. There were some toys And then all of a sudden, this interactive good guy doll comes out.
Yeah, yeah. It did seem kind of new because I think, did she say something like she wasn't able to like save up enough money for it yet or something?
Yeah.
So I do think it might be hot off the weird factory line that we see in Child's Play 2.
Yeah, and I remember as a kid, the like Cabbage Patch... I keep wanting to say Garbage Pail Kids because I love Garbage Pail Kids. The Cabbage Patch dolls... I want to say Cabbage Patch Kids, but they're Cabbage Patch Kids, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know why I'm really confused. But people are crazed for those, too. So it's like they get into that little bit of like the consumerism aspect of it. And then...
When I was growing up, we were all about Furbies.
Oh, yeah.
And I finally got one, and it was so creepy that I left it at my friend's house and never went back for it. It used to wake up at night, and I'd wrap it in clothes and put it in my dresser drawer, and it'd still wake up in the middle of the night and make its weird Furby noises.
Yeah, Furbies were pretty scary.
Yeah. I don't know why I hated dolls and I really wanted a Furby. It's like worse.
Yeah. Yeah, you could see that. Yeah. But anyway.
We're getting sidetracked.
Yeah. So
she goes to work. Yes. Her friend's there. She says there's a guy in a back alley selling a good guy's doll. And they go out and buy it for like, I guess they're normally like $100 and she gets it for like 50?
For like 30 or 30? I think, yeah, they kind of talk him down and then she gets it.
Which, oh my God, number one, don't buy animatronic dolls for your children. And definitely don't buy them from guys in a back alley. But the packaging is pristine. The doll is pristine, despite the explosion. So must be protected by that voodoo magic.
Yeah, I guess so. We'll cut into the chase. Andy's mom is like trying to get home to be there his birthday night. But, you know, the boss is being a jerk and, like, makes her work a shift. So she's able to get home and get him the present. But then she leaves him with Aunt Maggie.
Yes. Is that his real aunt? Or I think it's just, like, a coworker that he calls.
Yeah.
Yeah, Aunt Maggie, because she's, like, good friends with a mom, and I guess. So she offers to babysit when she can't get off work. And, you know, Andy's so excited for his doll. He takes the doll out and says, "Hi, I'm Andy. What's your name?" And the doll goes,
"Hi, I'm Chucky. Let's be friends to the end. Heidi ho."
Oh my God. Yes. So Chucky, as we know, is a nickname for Charles.
Yep. So it's Charles Lee Ray.
It's Charles Lee Ray. Yes.
And to me, it like establishes the Andy's going to get blamed for some of the happenings that Chucky's doing in their apartment.
What happens right away, because Chucky wants to watch the news because they're talking about his death on the news. They're talking about, you know, capturing the Lakeshore Strangler and looking for one of his accomplices.
Yeah, who was the getaway driver who got away by himself and left poor old Chuck in the dirt.
So it's time for Andy to go to bed. Andy tells Maggie that, you know, Chucky wants to stay up and watch the 9 o'clock news because that's totally normal. And she says, "No, you guys need to go to bed." So she puts him to bed, goes about her business. And suddenly, you know, she hears pitter patter of feet and the TV turns on the 9 o'clock news. And basically, this is kind of the creepy doll stuff. So you do get a bit of pitter patter and she's... says like, "Andy, is that you?" And it's not. And then she gets either pushed or scared and then falls out the window of the apartment and dies.
But she gets bashed in the head with the little the little good guy doll hammer.
Oh, that's what it was. Yeah. They don't really show it. They show like him grab the hammer, right? And then I think you see her like turn around and scream and then go through the, show like, the outside.
He swings it at her and it hits her and then she falls backwards and then
jeez. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yep.
And then that leaves
R.I.P. Maggie.
Yes. Yeah. And then Karen comes home and is like, I kind of like the trope of we as the audience see something awful happen and then one of the characters comes home and there's a crime scene.
Yeah. And she doesn't know, you know, is it, she knows it's her apartment building, but at first she doesn't know it's her apartment, and then she sees it's her apartment and is first like looking for her son, obviously that would be her priority, and then sees that he's okay, and then finds out that Maggie is dead, and you know the police obviously suspect that Andy had something to do with it. They see weird little footprints in the flower that, you know, it's the bottom pattern of the Chucky doll's shoes because it was Chucky that did it, but
were they Chuck Andy, Taylor's?
But Andy's also wearing good guy pajamas that have the same pattern on the bottom of his feet. So basically the whole rest of the movie is Andy saying he didn't do these things and then the mom not really believing at first.
Yeah, could you imagine being like, it's like the 80s and you're like a little kid and you're a super fan of everything and everything's commercialized and you have all the merchandise and then that thing that you love commits a crime that you get blamed for and then you suddenly look like some obsessed like weirdo.
Well, and he tells his mom, I guess, that like Chucky like pushed her out the window because she's like a bitch. Right. The little kid says that. At that point, the mom doesn't know that the doll is real, so the mom is going to be thinking that that's Andy coming up with that on his own.
And I like how he kind of recovers because he's just like, you're probably grieving about Aunt Maggie or something, mom. And she's like, yeah.
Yeah.
And then she like
nice try, kid. Yeah. But basically, he ends up skipping school one day, you know, on Chucky's orders. They go and they find the accomplice and lots of explosions. It's a surprising number of explosions in this movie because he goes and blows up the house, killing the accomplice. And then Karen gets the call, I guess, that Andy is in the police station and she goes there. Andy gets put under a psychiatric watch and Karen has to take the doll back to the apartment.
The really smart thing is how the plot create scenarios where people are able to transport Chucky from location to location to advance the plot, and it makes sense. And it seems, I mean, it's very well structured.
Like, yes.
I really love that about the movie.
Yeah, no, it's very smart.
There's like,
I feel
yeah.
like you wouldn't think it's that smart because it's Chucky, but it's
sorry, Tom Holland and Don Mancini listeners of the show.
I just feel like the comedic aspect of it. It didn't need to be as smart as it was to be successful, but someone obviously put a lot of care into constructing this movie.
So when you say comedic, do you think it's like into that realm of darkly comedic?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like, it's all, I guess, that Chucky is such a character. To me, he's such a character, and like Brad Dourif gives him so much personality. That's, yeah, it makes it really like funny in a, I don't know, in a dark way.
Even stuff like when Andy calls Maggie a bitch.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just like, there's just something a little bit funny. And like, there's more funny stuff towards the end too.
Yeah, because...
well, I think once Chucky comes to life...
Oh, once she brings him
home.
You know,
once, yeah, so she brings him home.
Yeah.
And she's starting to suspect it a little bit. So, you know, she's like shaking the doll, being like,
talk to me.
She ends up going and like grabbing the box and turning it over and de-sized good guy's batteries roll out of the box.
Yeah.
And she looks closely at the box and it says batteries included. And she, you know, is pretty sure that Andy did not put any batteries in that doll. So she goes and like slowly checks the battery patch and it's empty. She still hasn't like had it talk or anything. So
no,
she's like, say something.
Well,
brings him to the fireplace.
It takes fire, I guess, for old Charles Lee Ray to be like, I give up. I'm going to reveal myself that I'm this possessed doll.
Yeah, she lights a fire. She's about to throw him in there. And he freaks out. I feel like this is the first time you really see him, like, with his Chucky expressions, talking. She drops him. He does this, like, weird little stealth roll under the couch.
Oh, that roll's the best.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like this is kind of the movie's reaching its peak. I think this is where they fight and, like, Chucky starts bleeding. And he's like, what is going on? And then he ends up going to his old pal who kind of taught him the ways of voodoo while Karen goes to Chris Sarandon, his character that I can't remember his name.
Detective
Mike. You tell him like the doll is real and he does not believe her. So she says, well, I need to go find out like where the doll came from. So she goes to hunt down that guy that sold her the doll in the back alley. So you have these two going separate ways. So
Chucky goes
to the voodoo priest. Well, I don't want to talk about that yet because
I
feel like it's going to go full circle. So she ends up finding this guy in like a community of homeless people and he tries to, you know, sexually assault her and Chris Sarandon comes in with the save and they're able to get the information that this doll came from that burnt out toy store. And Mike, Chris Sarandon's character, knows, you know, exactly what happened in that toy store. You know, they realize that it's Charles Lee Ray and they make the connection to the voodoo also. They like almost cross paths at this voodoo priest, but Chucky gets there first and moiters him.
He does, with a voodoo doll.
Yes, with a voodoo doll.
Yep.
And Chucky finds out that the longer he stays in this doll, the more human he gets. And in order to escape from the doll, he needs to transfer his soul into the soul of the first person he revealed himself to. So that's Andy. And he needs to do that before he completely becomes the doll. So the doll, not that the doll becomes human, but the doll is like growing his organs and fleshy bits. And it's pretty gross.
And it's good exposition because it shows and tells, because like, you know, you have the little at a time of Chucky like being like, what's going on? And then you see his nosebleed and you see all of that kind of happening. And then he's the story of how he became to possess a doll. Like, it's like, oh, okay, you learn how that happened.
Yeah. So Karen and Mike end up getting there, and the priest is just clinging to life enough to tell them that they need to go save the boy, or else Charles Lee Ray will be back.
But then it goes all the way back to like Andy is in like a facility and Chucky's coming after him. And then it culminates with Detective Mike and Chucky's mom and Andy, right?
Yeah. They make it back to the house.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. They make it back. And then that's when you're like, all right, well, this is sort of has to wrap up somehow. I think the threat against Andy, it always feels like a real threat.
Yeah.
That something could happen to Andy. Yeah. Like,
and I feel like it has a good ending. It's a long fight, but they do end up managing. You know, Andy burns Chucky in the fireplace, but then he comes back and he's all like burnt up and freaky looking, and he gets shot a bunch of times. And then I think he comes back one more time after that to like go after that disbelieving cop before finally being dead with little finger air quotes. But I feel like if it was a more modern horror movie, it probably would have ended with like a wink wink nudge, actually they were able to switch souls and now like Chucky's and Andy.
Yeah.
Doesn't that feel like that would be like a 90s or early 2000s horror movie?
Oh yeah, yeah. Absolutely. I think so. Like freeze frame, yeah, on like him like looking sideways and then some
like
ominous
a little
music.
Smirk. Yeah. Yeah. I really like what they did with it. It was very satisfying. Epic doll battle. I like watching him get shot a bunch. Yeah. And then him coming back all like charcoaled.
And he's like charred doll. Partially fleshy too. So that makes it even better.
Yeah.
Because it's
like a
like
weird
gooey
mix
gory
of, yeah, like melted plastic, but also like burnt flesh. They did a great job.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
No, the all of that effects work is just amazing.
Yeah.
And the thing about Chucky too is that like he doesn't feel like a ripoff of Freddy Krueger or any of the like other like horror icons that talk a lot. He's like his own thing.
Yeah.
Just like David S. Pumpkins.
Yep.
Yeah, Child's Play. We follow that up with the screening of the second one, which they work well together. I mean, the same actor, Alex Vincent, plays Andy. So that's cool. Yeah. He loses the mom's character.
I was kind of disappointed. I mean, I wasn't disappointed. It was fine as a movie. It's just, it's really a bummer, this second movie. Like, it still has some comedic bits, but, like him being separated from his mom, especially when you watch it right after the first one and, like, you witness their bond. It's just like, oh, so she's just gone now. Okay, then. And then he's given to a foster parents who, spoiler alert, both get killed by Chucky after, you know, being convinced that, you know, Andy is doing all this stuff. So, like, they die thinking that Andy is, well, I guess the dad gets to see Chucky for a split second before dying. But, you know, the I don't know. I don't know. It's a bit tragic.
To John Connor in Terminator 2, where the T-1000 impersonates his parents and kills them. His step-parents.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
I don't know. It doesn't have anything to do with that. You can leave that in. You can
okay.
Cut it. Whatever. I don't care.
Oh.
You know, we'll probably go on a journey of watching more of the Child's Play ones and just probably reveal tidbits here and there as we watch them. But yeah, whew, that was a fun one. I'm glad you finally got to see it with me.
Yes, I have no regrets because I watched a couple days ago and I haven't had any nightmares.
Excellent.
That are doll related.
Yeah. Certainly, like after hearing the Robert the Doll story, maybe I'm a little more creeped out thinking about these dolls now.
Yeah, you should be.
Ooh, spooky.
Don't worry, I don't see any dolls. Let's see, I have a stuffed sloth. I have a stuffed donut with a cat face on it.
Yeah.
I don't think I have any dolls.
All right.
We should be safe.
Yep.
So that sloth comes to life and very, very slowly crawls into our bedroom.
Oh,
very, very slowly. Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. All right. Well, that's Child's Play and Chucky, Robert the Doll.
Yeah.
All those spooky dolls. All right. Well, this has been fun. I really, really enjoying these the spooky October discussions.
Yes. Just wait until next month. I've been planning out our episodes for next month, and they're going to be real murder heavy to make up for it.
All right.
Don't you
cool.
worry.
No, this has been a good break from the.
And I can say, because we've already had correct guesses on all of our social media.
Oh, yeah. What's our next episode about, Chelsea?
Our next episode is about Jack the Ripper.
Ooh.
Yes. Another heavy hitter. If you like to make up for all the horror-centric ones, you know, during the Texarkana Phantom Killer and Jack the Ripper, both in 1 month, I think it's a pretty fair deal.
Yeah, it's pretty good. So we have a maxi minisode here talking about Chucky. And what are we going to do about Jack the Ripper? It's going to be a three-hour episode, guys. Not really.
Well,
not really.
We'll see. We haven't recorded it yet.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. That's true. All right. Well, thanks everyone for joining us. And I hope you're enjoying your October and are in an appropriately spooky mood. The, you know, weather's starting to cool down and the leaves are starting to fall. And we're drinking lots of pumpkin spiced things of all sorts. Yeah.
Pumpkin spice latte.
Pumpkin spice latte.
Sorry. If you don't get that, watch this past week's John Oliver.
Yeah. All right. Remember to seek us out on social media, Instagram at Based on a True Crime, Twitter, True Crime Based, our Facebook page, Based on a True Crime, our website, basedonatruecrime.com, email us at basedonatruecrime@gmail.com. So we're looking forward to the next one. Thanks for joining us. And remember, death is but a door.
And time is but a window.
We'll be back.
With everything you have on your plate, earning your degree online seems impossible. But at Grand Canyon University, we specialize in helping you fit a master's degree in business into your busy day. Your graduation team, led by your own GCU counselor, provides you with the personal support you need to succeed. Achieve your goals with a plan and team behind you. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Visit gcu.edu.